10 minutes after 10 o'clock, our Thursday morning health segment. Here we go, folks. I want to warn you, your blood pressure is going to go up because you're going to get so angry at what you're about to hear. Especially ladies, please, please do not throw things at your radio. Your radio costs you money. I don't want to see damage in your house. But when you hear the truth about breast screening and how we, can I use a crude expression, scare the hell out of a lot of women for nothing when it comes to breast cancer, you're going to get really, really angry. We have a very special guest this morning. Pam Colleen is our regular guest. I don't even think of her as a guest. She's in-house. She's a friend, and I love her for a number of reasons. Number one, she's brilliant. Number two, she buries me every week in research, more videos and books than you can count. And thirdly, she's fearless and doesn't care how many sacred cows she kills out there. Now, there's an introduction, Pam, and I didn't even mention the fact that you've written two books and are working on another. But let's start with women and breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you were told as a woman you may have breast cancer, when you were told as a man that you may have prostate cancer, it scares the hell out of you.
Yeah.
And we're doing it to thousands and thousands of people in this country for nothing.
Right. And I think what people need to realize is that the more we have been spending on testing, on the medical care system in general, the sicker we keep getting. So clearly something is disconnected here. And a lot of the reason why we do this show, Andy, is because we want people to be fiscally responsible. We want to see a more efficient system. And we're not seeing an efficient system right now.
Because if we don't fix what we're doing, we're going to go broke right quick, because healthcare is our number one budget.
Yes, that's right. And Alan Castles is out here. We've got him on the show this morning. We're going to be talking about some of these issues. And he's out here trying to knock sense into the government for overspending on the medical system. It's not working for us. We're not any healthier for it. And unfortunately, we're heading towards bankruptcy if we don't do something radical here.
If you're listening this morning and you're wearing a white jacket and a pager, here's what he's not saying. He's not saying he hates all doctors. He's not saying all drugs are evil. He's not saying that all tests are just to make money. But he is asking some very pertinent questions. Pam, would you introduce our friend Alan Castles?
Right. Thrilled to have Alan on the show again this morning. This is Alan Castles. He's the author of a few books. One of them is called Seeking Sickness. The other is called Selling Sickness. He's a pharmaceutical policy researcher at the University of Victoria. And he joins us all the way from Victoria this morning. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
Where are you this morning, Alan? Are you out there on the left coast?
You bet. I'm in here in Victoria, sitting at my desk, my tea.
Well, we don't like talking to you in the wintertime because you always bring up the weather and how high are the snowbanks in London, Ontario. Something I want to know before I go to the park to have my lunch on a bench.
Absolutely. As I wander through the flowers.
Yes.
Now, you've written a wonderful new article. It's published online. It's called Choosing Wisely Is Anything But Wise, and you have a top 10 list. So I think in the light of David Letterman, I think we should go through your top 10 list and talk about this article. I'm so pleased to see that somebody out there is knocking some sense into the overspending in the medical world today.
So Pam, can I just set this up? The Choosing Wisely idea wasn't something that I thought of. You know, the medical professions in the U.S. and Canada have decided that they should sit down and come up with lists of things that they think are either unnecessary, useless, or perhaps harmful that they're currently doing. And so, you know, I give them some kudos for actually thinking, self-reflecting on their own practice. So that's a good thing. I looked at the various lists that were produced, and I thought, okay, well, that might be a start, but they didn't really go far enough. I mean, the kinds of things that they recommended that certainly for family physicians in Canada stop doing, you know, they should stop doing things like doing imaging, i.e. x-rays and so on, for lower back pain. They should stop giving antibiotics for upper respiratory infections. You know, giving antibiotics for colds and so on, not a good idea. Stop doing giving pap smears to women who are under 21 or over 68 and so on. Don't do the sort of annual blood screening test unless, you know, there's something specific that the patient, that there might be something about the profile of the patient. So that's their kind of top five list. You know, low-hanging fruit, in my opinion. They could have gone a lot further. Mm-hmm. And so the kinds of things that I sort of thought that they could stop doing. I mean, one we could have perhaps a whole conversation about this, and that is the annual physical. And the annual physical being, people thinking that their doctor expects them to come in once a year, even if they're perfectly healthy, have no symptoms, have no problems, but they should come in for, just in case, a kind of checkup. The annual physical has been thoroughly criticized and has been for probably 30 years, where they say, that's a waste of our time. We don't need to be luring people into our offices if they're otherwise healthy.
You know, that's interesting that you say that, because back in the 90s, I was very, very sick. I had chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, multiple chemical sensitivities. I was a really sick individual. And I'd go to the doctor and go for all these tests. And my own doctor, looked me in the eye and said, Pam, 95% of the tests that I send you for are going to come back normal. Even though I felt half dead, the tests that I was going for came back showing that I was allegedly normal, healthy, and I wasn't.
Right, wow. Yeah.
Just to show you how much inadequacy is going on in the system.
And the pressure, Alan, let's start with the whole breast screening issue, because I'm thinking particularly after watching a number of your videos very early this morning, obviously I'm a man, but I just related to women and how many women it takes when it comes to breast screening to save one life. Would you give us those figures?
Yes. The best data would say that you have to screen something like 2,000 women every year for 10 years to prevent one breast cancer death.
That's jaw-dropping. How many women, how many years to save one woman's life?
2,000 every year for 10 years.
Wow.
So you might say, well, you're still saving one life. Well, at the same time, of those 2,000 women, you're going to cause somewhere between 600 and 700 false positives, which is women will be told that they have something suspicious, they need to have a biopsy, they might need surgery and chemotherapy, radiation, and so on. So you're creating a heck of a lot of medical activity in order to save that one life.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you a comparison. If we wanted to cut down on traffic fatalities in this country, there's a very easy way to do that. No left turns. That's a very a guaranteed results.
Wow.
If you only could turn right, and a lot of accidents are caused by, but there's tremendous pressure on women to be screened. In fact, the one slogan I saw that I had to chuckle at, correct me if I'm wrong, but it goes along the lines, if you haven't had breast cancer screening, you need more than your breasts examined.
Yes.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, that was an ad from the American Cancer Society in the early 90s. I used that ad in a presentation that I did, and it just shows the extent to which, I mean, back then, by the way, they were recommending women 35 and over subject themselves to routine breast cancer screening. Now they're saying at least women 50 and over should consider it. The recommendations around mammography has changed a lot of it due to the fact that people are recognizing the harm benefit equation doesn't look so great. So mammography is on my top 10 list.
Okay, who should? Like, this is not all about opposing. I always say to someone who likes to oppose, do it and do it passionately and then propose. What are you proposing as to, because we have a lot of women listeners in terms of having breast screening.
To maintain your breast health. And before you get screened, you should understand that if they find something unusual, there is a 70 or 80% chance that that unusual finding is going to be a false positive. So you should know this in advance. So
I want to ask you in a moment about prostate cancer, but on the breast cancer issue, you say you'd have to screen 2,000 women every year for 10 years to save one life. Tell me what happens in the lives of those women who are given the false positive, that they are told you have cancer when they don't.
You see, this is what I find fascinating and scary about a lot of screening, is that the psychological impact of all of this cancer scares is never really measured. We don't know, but we suspect that giving people that kind of bad news, that potentially life-altering news, is going to lead to all kinds of things, possibly that affect their relationships, that affect their jobs, their result in them taking more drugs, perhaps antidepressants or anti-anxiety drugs. So the cascade of just telling someone they could be sick when they may not be, really has consequences.
Now, you've also scrutinized the PSA test as well.
Yep.
This ties in, is very similar to the mammogram in that now we're dealing with the men and a very common procedure that is done with men. And I'll never forget the title of the book that you shared with us once, and it was The Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers. That was a great, great book. So you're not the only one criticizing this test. There's others out there.
No, in fact, the biggest panel in the U.S. that evaluates screening came out with the recommendation they should simply stop doing it. And that was something I had said in my book, that I suspect that they're going to be telling people to stop doing this PSA screening. And, you know, the men who are listening might say, well, maybe my life could be saved by prostate cancer screening. Yes, at the same time that you're statistically more likely to have your life ruined by the PSA test than to have your life saved.
But the PSA test, the numbers can be elevated for other reasons, like an infection or something along that line. So
that's right.
There again, the notion of being a false positive.
Yeah.
We talked about the psychological effects on women of being told they have breast cancer when they don't. I mean, you see dramatic examples of how women are terrified of breast cancer. Angelina Jolie.
Yep.
I mean, do you support what she did?
Well, she's in a different category. So it was a carrier of a certain type of gene that does actually have a much higher risk of having of developing breast cancer. So she did what is probably the most radical thing, which is what they call a bilateral mastectomy. She had both of her breasts removed just in case. So women are doing this if they fall in the same category of Angelina Jolie, which is having this very high risk due to a genetic abnormality, though that is extremely rare, probably less than 2% of the female population.
Do you think that in her particular situation that was a good decision?
It's really hard to say. I'm not in the position myself, I don't know how I would react. But if you're told that you've got a 70 or 80% chance of developing a certain type of cancer in part of your body, and you can live without it, would you make the decision to have that removed or not? I mean, it's not an easy decision. Clearly.
Just to complete the picture, we were talking about the psychological effects of women having being told they have breast cancer when they don't. Men, it seems all of my older men friends, I could name 10, and I'm not exaggerating, who have had prostate cancer surgery in the last few years. And you're saying a lot of those tests are very, very questionable. Talk to us about how that messes up a guy's life.
Well, the problem with the PSA test, other than the fact that there is a lot of false positives, is that in terms of comparing men who are screened versus men who are not screened, the screened men don't live any longer. So if you're getting a PSA test thinking that you're going to live longer, you're mistaken. What they will do, though, is that they will more likely find something that will result in biopsies, which can be dangerous themselves, and can result in prostate cancer treatment. And so those men end up becoming impotent, incontinent, or possibly both. So the quality of their life, I had one doctor tell me, though, PSA testing is not going to make you live longer, but it's going to make your life feel longer.
You won't live to be 120, but it'll feel like it. I mean, the two bombshells you just dropped, for any man, he'd want to just shoot himself, right? No sex and wetting yourself all day. I mean, not a happy story.
Wearing diapers, right?
Mm.
Yeah. So I mean, they are obviously. I mean, to give some credit to the urology profession, they are obviously trying to minimize those kinds of effects. But the question is the test even necessary in the first place? And certainly, if you've got any symptoms, again, if you've got difficulty urinating and so on, That's when you need to see your doctor. But if you're a normal, healthy male that has no symptoms or no problems, submitting yourself to the PSA test could start you down this cascade.
Alan, I have to jump in because I have a job to do. I hate doing it, but we do have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to go through some of the individual items on your don't do list.
Okay.
Very, very interesting. Don't order annual physicals for healthy people. So, I don't know, on my car, I go and get the oil checked. Are you saying just wait until something hurts before you see your doctor? I'll ask you that question when we come back in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Into court for assaulting the police because his wife, who had dementia, was outside and was talking about a bad guy inside, was very confused. He came out to rescue her and got a little rough with the cop. 88 years old. So we dragged him into court. Everybody knew what was going to happen. He was convicted and then given an absolute discharge. And I talked to the lawyer. What did that accomplish? Well, you know, it gives the blah, blah, blah. It avoided a lawsuit against the police, but it cost us roughly $50,000. Here's the point. We waste money. We are so gifted at wasting money for no apparent reason. So let's take the same scenario, wasting the $50,000, dragging an 88-year-old man into court, into the health field. Are we wasting money in the health field, Pam?
Billions. We're wasting billions of dollars on healthcare, on strategies that are simply not proven to improve the quality of our lives, improve outcomes. We have to be more discerning when it comes to the choices we make in the healthcare system.
And we're testing for everything all the time, even on healthy people.
That's right, even on healthy people. And what Alan was talking about, you know, these annual physicals, for example, that's not really improving. There's no proof to say that it's making us any healthier as a society. I think it just might give people some peace of mind, but it's look at how much we're in trouble financially in this province.
Let's introduce the list again for people who have just joined us. I want to do this top 10 list, David Letterman's top 10 list as it applies to the health field. Alan Castles has a list. Let's start with number 10. Alan Castles, you're saying don't order annual physicals for people who are healthy. The obvious question is, do you wait until something hurts before you go to the doctor?
Well, that's sort of what the experts are telling us. The annual physical on its own for otherwise healthy people does not add value, is what they're saying. And so definitely go to the doctor if you've got any problem or any concern. But if you're otherwise healthy, you can skip the annual physical.
Okay, that's number 10. Let's go to number 9, Pam.
The statin issue, it's huge. It's absolutely enormous. Of course, this is a multi-billion-dollar industry. And, Alan, you're asking patients to be very leery of the statins.
Cholesterol.
Yes, we've talked about this in the past. And I would say, you know, unless you've got some serious concerns or a family history, don't even bother getting your cholesterol tested. And if your doctor wants to prescribe a statin, then I think that you should be required to read the comprehensive literature on the potential for adverse effects of that drug and then beg your doctor for the drug.
And let's remind listeners that you're saying this based on research, that you've done the number crunching, and you're not just saying this and pulling this information out of the air. You've actually done the research to show this.
Well, I mean, and I'm not the only one saying this. I mean, there's lots of people out there that are saying that we have to completely rethink the way we prescribe statins in this country or in this in the world, because the very marginal benefit those drugs provide and the potential for harm are huge. So we should stop really doing stupid things.
Well, you know, I think back to our conversation a few moments ago when you said men being screened for prostate cancer don't live any longer. And I went, did I hear what I just heard? Is that what he said, Pam?
Yeah. In fact, I think on the show before you talked about a country in Europe where they don't do the PSA test and they have the identical outcomes here in North America, right?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, countries that have widespread screening programs versus those that don't, you don't see a difference in the rate of prostate.
So what do I say to my friends over coffee? And I can name 10 of them who've had the prostate cancer surgery. Are they saying, has my life gone to hell for nothing?
Well, you could be a bit more gentle and say, you know what, our thinking on the PSA has changed over time. And as it does, you know, the way we don't do some of the stupid things that we used to do.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Okay, number 8 on Alan Castle's don't do list.
Well, that's the PSA test, and then number 7 being the mammogram. So we've already talked about those.
Okay, so let's move to the next one. Number 6, don't offer anyone, no woman, man, or beast, a bone density test.
Right. you know, we are obsessed with checking the density of our bones because the osteoporosis industry consistently tells us, you know, we're going to fall and break a bone unless we test our bone density and take drugs to prevent fractures. The drugs prescribed for bone density are very toxic. The benefits of those drugs are very marginal. And people can do lots of other things if they're worried about their bone density other than taking drugs.
Do you know that in the last 5 minutes, you've already saved our health ministry about $8 billion?
Yeah, and I'd like a check, too. But
yes. A wee tiny commission on all of the money that you are saving for the Ontario government, which is very, very quickly going broke. Okay, the next one.
So the next one being, we're getting into the area of pregnancy. So there's lots of over-treatment and over-medicalization in pregnancy. And one of them is artificial induction. So women who are told, you know, you're overdue and we're going to give you drugs to speed up your labor. In an otherwise healthy woman who's pregnant, that is going to more often than not lead to a cesarean section, which good surgery if it's medically necessary, but the wrong thing to do if it's just about convenience and trying to speed things up.
Right. I mean, C-sections, I think people are starting to hear more and more that they've been, over-prescribed, shall we say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the World Health Organization estimates that the rate of C-section should, the natural rate, should be somewhere between 10 and 15%. And I think in Canada, it's probably, depending on the jurisdiction, somewhere between 25 and 30%.
I've heard of hospitals where they're doing as high as 50% C-section rate.
Yeah, so we're probably doing twice as many unnecessary this type of surgery than we need.
Unbelievable. I wish we had a price tag for each of these procedures. Now, this next one, Pam, I know is very dear to your heart. Stop giving children antidepressants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you talk about the mood disorder in our schools. Quote those figures, if you would, for Alan Castles.
Oh, well, the teachers here in London, they did the survey, and they basically concluded that about 28% of our kids have some sort of mental or mood disorder. And unfortunately, they label these kids as being Prozac deficient or Ritalin deficient or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, so, I mean, we could have a whole conversation about the drugging of children, but certainly antidepressants in children. There is good evidence that shows that those drugs will increase the risk of suicide. So don't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't prescribe those drugs to kids.
But somebody right now is going to say, you know, you've just put half the doctors in this province or this country out of business. We would have a health disaster, Alan Castles, if we went down this road.
I don't think so. You know, the doctors I know, no one has, when this list came out, no one has disagreed with me. In fact, I invite people to sort of, if they disagree with my list, to write me and tell me why. No one has disagreed. In fact, people have written and said, oh, you should have put this on the list. You should have put that on the list.
What are some examples of what people are suggesting, just out of curiosity?
Well, one woman wrote me and said, you know, ultrasounds. When you go in, they're constantly giving you ultrasounds for all kinds of stuff. And ultrasounds will find things and will lead to all kinds of medical consequences. Now, I don't know whether ultrasounds are overused. Quite likely they are. What other things? Somebody said that you should absolutely not give the HPV vaccine to young girls. We've talked about this in the past. I would tend to agree with that. So that kind of thing.
Okay, Diane has a question for you, Alan, if we could. Diane, go ahead.
Yes. When you go to your dentist and you don't have any pain or suspicion of any cavities, but then they say that you should have a full panoramic x-ray every 3 years, is that not overkill as well?
Well, you know, absolutely. In fact, I'm always arguing with my dentist, who I really like, who wants to give me and my kids an x-ray every time we go in there. And I say, no, we have no symptoms. I don't think an x-ray is going to show anything that you wouldn't otherwise know about. So, no, stop exposing us.
Diane, let me ask you, when the dentist says that to you, what do you suspect? I'm not planting any seeds in your mind. Is his or her motivation?
Well, sometimes, and this is a new dentist, and I do like him, money.
Hmm.
Money? Yeah. Money is the inspiration for some medical procedures. Diane, that's absolutely shocking.
Okay, but I wouldn't want to impugn the reputation of all dentists. I mean, I think that Yeah, you know, if you've got insurance, and a lot of us do, private insurance to cover our dental bills, you're more likely to get more procedures than fewer procedures. That's pretty clear.
Diane, let me just ask you for your perspective, and we know Diane is a fairly regular caller, and she's a pretty savvy woman. Just your perspective on what you're hearing from Alan Castles. Is it making you cynical about the medical profession?
Well, I've had the mammograph done. I've had the bone density done. And I wondered about this bone density thing. Like, I mean, I'm 65, and I still think I'm the same height as I was when I was 16, so I don't think I have osteoporosis. I try to eat my way, Pam said. So I think sometimes they're drawing at straws to put you through, and maybe it's a training experience for some of these medical kids that are coming along.
Diane, I really appreciate your call. We have to take a short break. We'll be back with, if you have questions for Alan Castles, and then we'll complete our list. Stop obsessing about your patient's blood pressure, especially in elderly people. Alan Castles, somebody's going to call and say, what are you doing, trying to kill off half our population? You're cynical about the medical profession. Some of our callers may be cynical about you. Here's your chance, folks, to ask Alan Castles a question directly. 643-1290 when we come back in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Andy Udman and Pam Colleen in conversation with Alan Castles. And Pam, he has a couple of great book titles.
Yes, Selling Sickness and Seeking Sickness. And we have his limerick book here, too, The ABCs of Disease Mongering. If we have time, maybe you can read one of his great limericks in the book.
We will. Alan, I want to warn you, every single line is lit up. People are so curious about what you're saying. Let's start with James. James, go ahead, and then Tim, then Josie. Go ahead, James.
Okay. What does it say about a dentist when you go there, regular checkups, and the next thing you know, the junior dentist or one of the staff tell you, oh, gee, our x-ray didn't show that rot going right down to your jaw, and we're going to have you have that tooth removed, and that tooth happened to be a root canal and a crown.
I guess the first thing you do is call your bank manager. Alan, what's your response, Alan?
Yeah, you know, I don't actually know a lot about dentistry. It sounds to me like... you've had unnecessary treatment, and, you know, yeah, you might have to get a second opinion on that.
James, let me ask you for your opinion on what you just said.
I had the tooth removed because when I went to the hospital, they said, indeed, it's rotten down to the bone, and they had to remove it. Matter of fact, they couldn't suture it because there was an infection at the bone. And I'm wondering why they can't read x-rays in these.
You should read the book. You should read the book, The Root Canal Cover-Up by Dr. George Meinig.
Oh, great. And I got a hole in my jaw rather than the book.
Oh, dear.
Pam, you're going to drive this guy to drink. great call, James. I appreciate it. Tim, go ahead.
Morning, everyone. A couple of quick points. I don't disagree with the presentation of all this information at all. But the problem is it's in a vacuum. And if you got prostate cancer and even though it's a very small chance, you end up dying of it. We live in a society that is so litigious. You just spoke about it with that situation with the police and the senior citizen thing where they were avoiding a lawsuit.
So what are you saying, Tim?
I'm saying if you can protect healthcare practitioners, whether it's dentists, doctors, whomever, from that kind of backlash, then maybe this kind of thing backs down. But if I'm any kind of medical practitioner and I know there's a test that's going to cover my rear end, I'm going to order it because that way I'm not in any financial or professional
danger.
Tim, that's a huge issue. And if you can't, I mean, we can talk about these things and present evidence, and that's great. The mammogram piece, the prostate cancer thing, I heard a great line one time from a urologist. With prostate cancer, every single man in the world is going to have it. It's just whether you die.
That's absolutely true, and it's a great question. I want to get a response from both Pam and Alan.
Yeah, I think we're entrenched in this system today, and people feel protected in this system. And I understand the question. It's going to take a long time before we start distilling things down into a very efficient healthcare system. But I'd like Alan maybe to respond to the question.
I think what you're talking about is what they call defensive medicine, where doctors order tests because they're concerned about litigation down the road if something goes wrong. I think in terms of a PSA test, I don't know of any case in Canada where a doctor has been successfully sued by a patient because they didn't order a PSA test. I think what trumps anything in this is what we call informed consent. So if the doctor can write in the chart, I've discussed PSA, the test with my patient, and the patient has chosen not to do it, that would be sufficient. My feeling is in the U.S., there's a lot more perhaps chances of litigation, and it's a much more litigious society. But I think in Canada, doctors don't really have to worry about getting sued for not ordering screening tests.
Good point. Josie, go ahead.
Yes. When you have a bone density test that shows your T-score isn't very good and the doctor says you need a bone density test every year and you should be on medication, and I've done my own research and it's very toxic, the medications they're suggesting, what do you do?
Alan, go ahead. I work at a nutritional level with people, but Alan, maybe you have something to share.
Yeah, you know, the whole T-scores and the bone density test is so controversial. I mean, there are people who have written books saying that we shouldn't be doing bone density testing at all. And I tend to agree when you look at the evidence around benefit. They will only lead to people taking bisphosphonate drugs. These are drugs like Fosamax or Actonel. These drugs have very toxic side effects and will not leave you your bones that much stronger.
Josie, great question. Okay, we were working on our top 10 list. We are up to number 2. Pam?
Stop obsessing about your patient's blood pressure, especially in elderly people. This is a big bomb, Alan. What do you have to say about that?
Well, you know, if your blood pressure gets higher as you get older, guess what? That's not you're getting sicker, that's normal. And I'm not talking about off-the-charts blood pressure, but slightly elevated blood pressure in older people is normal. And yet we see recommendations about physicians being told to get that blood pressure down to, you know, 120 over 80. And so for older people, that might require 1, 2, 3 antihypertensive drugs. They have low blood pressure, then they get dizzy when they stand up, they fall, they break their hip, they die. Mm. I'm not saying that that's what happens all the time, but there are dangers to over-medicating for blood pressure in older people.
Okay, and the number one item on Dr. Alan Castle's don't-do list, Pam?
For patients who have type 2 diabetes, you're suggesting it's far more practical to use more of a dietary approach, for example, than to constantly bloodlet.
Well, I think that the constant testing and retesting of blood sugars, that's kind of what I'm going at. I don't know if whether doctors are ordering patients to do this, but some people who've told they got type 2 diabetes will test themselves 8-10 times a day. If your blood sugar is under reasonably good control, that's a waste of time. You're bloodletting, you're obsessing with something that you probably shouldn't be doing.
Alan, we have 5 minutes left, and I want to cover a lot of territory. I want to share, if we could, Ryan, a report, just a portion of a report last night on CTV News about vaccines. It's back to school. When do you go back to school in BC, Alan?
The day after Labor Day.
Okay, so. Same as here. So there always is a big push from the health unit to get that vaccine for your kids. I want to play just a portion of this report on CTV last night about the vaccines and then ask you about both Gardasil and vaccines.
Back to school can also mean back to germs. Celine Moreau tells us how parents and kids can prevent bringing home more than just homework. Mikey and Tyler are getting ready to enter grades 1 and 3 next week. It's a new year of learning, but one thing they've been taught at home already is germ prevention.
Definitely washing their hands a lot and then making sure that they don't share their food with other friends and that sort of just your general basic things that you're brought up with.
Classrooms can quickly become breeding grounds for colds and flus. So the Middlesex London Health...
Okay, let's just jump ahead a wee little bit, if we could, Ryan, just to the part about the vaccines. Here we go.
Hi. It's not just colds and flus that can spread through schools quickly, but more severe illnesses can as well. That's why the Middlesex London Health Unit says it's important to be up to date on all immunizations.
The Ministry of Health has added 3 new immunization requirements before students start school this year.
And those are pertussis or whooping cough and meningitis. And that's for all children who are in school. And then varicella or chickenpox for children who are born in 2010 or later. So the kids who are coming into JK this year.
But those aren't the only vaccines that the health unit recommends. Price says the flu shot is also very important.
Children are great spreaders of flu, and so it's important for people of all ages to receive the flu vaccine, but it's very important for children to receive it as well. And the earlier they can receive it, the better.
Okay, so there's the advice every year. Pam, let me get your spin first, and then Alan. Pam, you and I have had many, many discussions about this.
Yeah, I mean, when you look in history and you see the introduction of these vaccines on the marketplace, you know, we had a good handle on infectious diseases after we started implementing chlorinated water, hand washing, refrigeration, less crowded living conditions. You know, we had employed a lot of improved sanitation and hygiene in society, which actually led to the reduction in infectious diseases. So a lot of the infectious diseases we're talking about here were already on their way out before the vaccine actually hit the market.
So you've avoided the question, what's the story on vaccines? And if you had kids, would you...
Oh, no, if I had children, no, I would definitely not vaccinate them. No.
Alan?
Yeah, I mean, I do have kids, and I have vaccinated them with the basic recommended ones. The problem is they start adding more and more every year. I mean, chicken pox, give me a break. You know, chicken pox is something that kids will get. They'll get through it, and they'll have immunity for life. And so the chicken pox vaccine, I think, is irrational. The flu shot, again, kids are going to get flus. They're going to develop a good immune system by having the flu, and by so vaccinating kids with flu, I don't think that's a very good idea. Meningitis, again, the complications of meningitis are so rare. My kids aren't vaccinated for meningitis. I don't think that's a useful.
A quick word about Gardasil.
Quick word. It is highly controversial, Andy. You wouldn't believe the kinds of media that are out there in other countries that are trying to take the vaccine off the market because of the perceived dangers. We're very slow here in Canada, but I think other countries are coming around to the fact that we have to rethink the whole HPV vaccine.
Alan Castles, we're almost out of time. Let me give you the next minute, 90 seconds, to just wrap everything you have said. Wrap it up, put it in a little box, and put a bow on it. What's your message?
So my 10 list, you'll want to go over it. Commonground.ca is the website where you'll find my articles. You know, there are some things that doctors are recognizing that they do that are useless, potentially harmful, and it's good that they're thinking about this. So look for the term choosing wisely. That's the campaign that they're undertaking to try to stop unnecessary and potentially harmful medicine.
And they're only recommending the low-hanging fruit. You're talking about some other measures that could be employed that would reduce
healthcare
costs.
Yeah, I just think they should go a little bit further.
And if you had to pick one from your list of top 10 not to do, which one would it be?
Probably the annual physical.
That would save us probably billions of dollars every year, right?
And lots of headaches.
True.
Wow.
I can
Alan,
see that.
Alan Castles, wish we had more time. We don't.
And his website, by the way, is just his name, Alan Castles, A-L-A-N-C-A-S-S-E-L-S, alancastles.com.
That's right.
Do you ever get through Penticton?
Yes.
If you do, say hello to my sister Tina, okay?
Okay.
She's the one who doesn't look like me, and that's a good thing. Alan, thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Alan.
Terrific. Parting words, Pam.
No, I just think people should follow his website. He's always updating it. He's writing articles. He writes a few articles every year, and he's got a really important one on
Let me ask you to summarize the whole hour in 30 seconds.
Well, the more money we spend on healthcare, the worse off we are. But the reason why we have this show is so that we can not only help people be more empowered to take control of their health, it's to stop this province from going bankrupt.
Wow. And people send me emails. You know, you guys.
Oh, they get so angry, but they're not understanding the bottom line.
No, but people are sending me emails. You guys must be paid by somebody, because we know the drug companies. You know, they sponsor ABC News, and we know they're making money on all the drugs. But guys must be making money somehow. I'm almost afraid to admit we're not.
No,
we're not selling anything.
No.
We're not selling anything. We just want people to know.
Listen, I don't want anybody to go through what I went through, you know, when I was sick. And a lot of these problems can be solved if just people had the nutritional information.
There we go. 11 o'clock news on the other side. That absolutely jaw-dropping, can you believe what you just saw?